Welcome to Spirit in Action. My name is Mark Helpsmeet, and each week we bring you visits and conversations with people doing healing work for this world, hearing what they're doing and what inspires them and supports them in doing it. Welcome to Spirit in Action. I am so very pleased to have as my guest today for Spirit in Action the talented, insightful, creative, and joyful Peterson Toscano. I first got to know Peterson in 2007 when I interviewed him about his work to support and heal ex-gay survivors, the men who, like him, spent years trying to be cured from being gay and ended up being seriously, almost lethally injured by that treatment. I observed Peterson as he dove deeply into biblical study around nonconforming sex roles in the Bible and transforming ways of seeing the lessons of that book. Finally, since 2012, I've seen Peterson's dedicated and creative work on climate change, and I've been delighted to feature his podcast contents on Spirit in Action Quarterly to enlarge his listenership and enrich the ears, hearts, and souls of my listeners. Peterson currently produces programs for Citizens Climate Radio, Climate Changed, Quakers Today, The Seed, and other programs. There's a longer, uncut version of this show on northernspiritradio.org, and I hope you'll get the full scoop there. Thanks, by the way, to Andrew Jansen for production assistance on today's show. Right now, we go to my in-person interview with Peterson Toscano on the campus of Haverford College, just outside of Philadelphia, PA. Peterson, what a delight to have you here today for Spirit in Action.
It's great to see you face-to-face and not just email-to-email or phone-to-phone.
We've been doing so much of that for many years now. On Spirit in Action, we've been featuring Citizens Climate Radio for 5-6 years, something like that. Also, the work that you're doing with Climate Changed, the BTS Center. We've occasionally slipped in some other things, Bubble and Squeak and all that. But it all started back in 2007 in River Falls, Wisconsin, when I sat down and interviewed you because Bonnie Tinker said, I had to get to know you. You said you were thinking about Bonnie this past week?
Yeah, Bonnie Tinker, she was an activist for many years. In fact, there's a famous Supreme Court case that her family was involved with because they refused to stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance. I think that's the correct case. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court. It's Tinker versus something. So even as a young person, she was engaged in activism. She was an incredible peace activist, anti-war activist. In later in life, she formed the Really Pissed Off Grannies during the George W. Bush administration, where as little old lady grannies, they would do pretty amazing and daring feats of activism. My favorite is when they went to a hotel where there's a restaurant, but Donald Rumsfeld was also going to speak. So they went in their granny garb with all of these gifts for someone whose birthday they were celebrating. But at the key moment, they opened up all the gifts, and it was all these props to do a citizen's arrest of Donald Rumsfeld with giant handcuffs and posters and things like that. So she was very involved in that. She was very involved with Love Makes a Family to fight for LGBTQ rights, particularly marriage rights and others. But I loved how she artfully used theater and play in her activism. And I learned a lot from her when, you know, we did a tour together in Oregon. And I just found her so delightful. And I was thinking about her today because she died tragically at an FGC gathering in Blacksburg, Virginia. She was an avid bike rider. And there she was riding on the campus and was struck by a vehicle, a truck, and died. And it was devastating for those of us there. But I remember she was also a polarizing character because I don't think you can be a good activist if you don't push people's buttons. And sometimes it means that people find you really annoying. And I think that's part of the job of a prophet and an activist. Not that you're trying to be annoying, but you just can't help it because you've got this fire that you need to put out in the world. And sometimes people get burnt.
Do people consider you that way?
I don't think so. You know, I'm always quite surprised because I'm super active on social media, which can be an incredibly toxic place. And I never get pushback, which is so weird because I talk about gay stuff. I talk about alternative readings of the Bible. And I'm talking about climate change. It's like you're asking for trouble. And yet, yet I don't get it. I'm on TikTok all the time, and I just mostly get positive responses. I think it's partly because of tone. I have a disarming tone. I use comedy. I'm self-deprecating at times. I try to be thoughtful about things. And whenever I do get some sort of pushback, I'm often super curious about what this person is really trying to say. So I'm sure I annoy people, particularly my husband and other people in my life, with all kinds of things. But I think as an activist, my tools are such that they're more disarming than alarming.
Are those tools that you grew up with or that you developed?
Well, that's a good question. Comedy definitely was always a part of my life. I was a class clown. My mom loves to tell some story about how one day the neighbors across the street were having a party, and I was hanging out there. I was in kindergarten, and I was there for a long time. So my mom finally went over. It was an adult party. It wasn't a kid's party. Went over to say, like, I'm sorry if our kid's bothering you. And all the adults are sitting there in the living room, and I'm apparently entertaining them. And they said, no, it's fun. It's great. He's giving us a great time. So I don't have any memory of that, but that is in the family lore. So comedy was always really important to me. And I think also I'm an introvert. You know, I'm a very extroverted entertainer, performer, but I'm actually very quiet and, you know, and reserved in many ways. And I think that's an excellent combination for comics often because it gives us a sensitivity to the world that doesn't always come through in comedy. I mean, comedy can be harmful. It can be violent. It can make light of very serious situations. It also can shed light on important issues. And I think that the shyness, the introversion, mixed with this desire to entertain people has worked as a really good combination for me. My knowledge of the world, though, was very limited. And so as I've grown in understanding systems of oppression and ways that people are being harmed by society, that obviously altered my message. But the technique of using comedy to help relax people, to help them see an issue in a fresh light, that's kind of been the hallmark of the work that I've been doing since 2003 as a performance artist.
So when I first interviewed you in 2007, doing time in the Nomo Homo House, did I get that right?
Almost, doing time in the Homo Nomo Halfway House.
Halfway House, yes. Okay. I didn't think there was any halfway about it. But that kind of comedy insight, and it's not just comedy laugh at it, it's comedy feel something within me and make a change in my life because I see things differently then. Good comedy should do that for us, of course. I interviewed you about that and other work that you did. I think re-education of George W. Bush.
No President Left Behind.
Yes. You stopped doing those things. And of course, I loved them. So why did you leave that?
It's been a strange thing. But when I started doing this play, Doing Time in the Homo Nomo Halfway House, How I Survived the Ex-Gay Movement, it really was public witness about trauma and harm and abuse that came from people who thought they were helping me. They were, in many ways, well-meaning Christians who wanted to have a compassionate approach towards homosexuals, as we were most commonly referred to back in those days in the 80s and the 90s. So they set up these programs and treatments to try to cure us so that we could reap the benefits of being straight. And in their minds, that also meant being closer to God and going to heaven. Although their hearts were in the right place, their theology wasn't, and they didn't know what they were doing. They weren't trained therapists. So many of us were terribly harmed psychologically, emotionally, all kinds of ways. But people didn't know about this, that it was happening. Or if they did, they thought it was a big joke. Oh, how stupid. These people think they can change others. These people think they can change. But what was missing was, no, this is something, if you get through it, you're a survivor. It is like abuse. So that's when I began to tell stories about my 17 years in conversion therapy. And it's not funny. It's not a funny story, but it's ridiculous at the same time. So there's a lot of humor in it. But at that time, I almost like was negotiating with God. I had just become a Quaker right about that time. I had this moment in my little apartment in Hartford, Connecticut, where it was like I had this vision. And in the vision, it was just like this idea that some people become public figures for a time when they're seen. They're on the news, they're on television, they're invited to things. And it was almost like Spirit was saying, if you want to be this person, you could be in regards to this issue of conversion therapy. And it wasn't like, do you want to be famous today? I think it's about like being famous for being famous. But it was like, you've got a message. If you want, you can be a public person and present it to the public. And I sat there and I literally saw it in my mind go by on stage, on TV, in newspaper articles, as if it had already happened. But the decision was mine. And I basically sat there and I said, yeah, I'm willing. It was as if downloaded into my brain, the next five steps just appeared. And I just like do this, 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 and this. But I remember thinking, but I only want to do it for 5 years. Because I was a teacher. I was a teacher at a school that I loved teaching at. Actually, I was a support teacher for teachers and for students. It was this great creative job at a school called the Watkinson School in Hartford. And I loved it. And I just wanted to get back to it. But I said, I'll do this for 5 years. And it blew up. Literally, I went all over the world. I was on the Tyra Banks Show, Montel Williams, New York Times, speaking to thousands and thousands of people. And we launched a whole movement, the ex-gay survivor movement, that really brought these messages out into the public. So we had then people on Good Morning America and the Today Show. And it was really not a lot of people, but it all came out of my show. And then I connected with people through that show and we created a movement. And about 7 people stood up and told their stories. And now when you say conversion therapy, most people know, oh, that's really harmful. And there are laws in states and countries now as a result that ban that practice. But when the 5 years was up, I was like, I'm done, right? My time's up. And it was about at the end of that time that I began to see how gay men were being very mean and oppressive towards trans women and towards gay men who were kind of effeminate. And I got so angry because I'm thinking, I didn't just spend nearly 20 years in church-inspired oppression of people to land in a rainbow-clad version of the same thing. What are we thinking here? And that's when I felt the need to look at the Bible and to explore the stories and lives of people in the Bible who don't conform to traditional gender nonconforming Bible characters.
So you didn't start that until well after you've come into the rainbow in the life and you've outed yourself? Because you've been studying the Bible intensively for 17 years or whatever, right?
That's right. And after I came out, I couldn't even go near it for many years because I learned it as a tool of destruction, to destroy every part of me that was gay and creative and innovative. So I would read a passage in Psalm that says, the Lord loves the righteous, but he abhors wickedness. To me, in my brain, it was God loves the heterosexual, but he abhors the homosexual. And I had to renew my whole mind. So there was a long time I couldn't even open a Bible. But when I finally did, I looked at stories, because that's where the life is, in a story. And I looked at the woman with the issue of blood who had this hemorrhaging problem. And she got into her head, if she can just touch the hem of Jesus's garment, she'll be okay. She felt so much shame, she wouldn't touch him because she was an unclean woman in the society. And she literally extracted a healing from him. And that story spoke to me because I thought of all those years of going from therapist to therapist and pastor to pastor, trying to cure myself of a social ill and only getting more depressed and confused. And that story really spoke to me. So then it was, around 2007, I began working on transfigurations, transgressing gender in the Bible, going to then to seminaries and presenting it and to a Society for Biblical Literature and, you know, really engaging with other scholars about it. And again, it was about 5 years I did that. And then you saw this emergence of a whole set of young trans non-binary Bible scholars. And I was like, it's time for me to walk away. They've got it covered. And then I thought, good, it's 2012. I can just go back to teaching.
What were you teaching, by the way?
I was what was called an infusion teacher. I actually worked with the entire 9th grade faculty and students, and I infused the classroom with better teaching practices. So I helped the teachers become better teachers by building on their strengths and introducing new concepts and ideas. And I taught to the students how to be better learners. So it was this very progressive, holistic approach, and I loved it. But in 2012, that's when I had an apocalypse, a revelation about climate change. And so I was like, oh, I guess
I guess not back to teaching.
Will it take 5 years to fix climate change? I don't know. So that's been since 2012. I've been working almost exclusively on climate change while also bringing in the Bible and bringing in LGBTQ liberation as well.
Trying to reorient my mind here because there's some changes that I hadn't understood. Of course, I've been witness to all of those changes since 2007. I've watched you go through that. I was at FGC gathering when you spoke, sharing a lot of your stuff. The story I remember best is about the person for the Last Supper who you're going to meet, this man carrying water. The whole understanding about that one, because that one I think is very easy to translate to people. It's like, wait a minute. That is such, he's walking around in high heels and he's a drag queen or something. To understand that Jesus said, that's the person who's going to guide you to this holy last place. That just blew my mind. So I remember at FGC when you spoke about that, and FGC, again, folks were not inside this cabal of Quakers. Friends General Conference gathering is where we're present at the moment in Philadelphia, Haverford College.
It's actually a Quaker Jamboree, basically.
Quaker Jamboree. Sounds good. And so I witnessed that. And of course, I became aware right away about Citizens Climate Radio. You had certainly been doing media stuff, producing your shows and so on, Transfigurations, etc. So maybe you were already learning the technology that you use for CCR.
Well, here's a funny story you don't know about my very sordid, wild, different lives that I've lived. I feel like I've lived many lives. So while I was trying not to be gay, I was living in New York City, which, by the way, is not an easy place to not be gay. Even if you're not gay. It's just, you know, there's a lot. But I was married to a woman, and I was really on this path to be a straight person. And in the middle of all that, it was not going well. About into 2 years into the marriage, we've talked about this before, I felt so overwhelmed. I thought I was going to take my life. For about a week of my life then, it was around 26, I just imagined jumping in front of a subway every morning because it just felt so impossible. And somehow I got reasoned out of that, and thinking my family in particular and how much it would hurt them. But in the middle of all that, we get this opportunity to go to Zambia as missionaries. And it was because a friend of mine who knew me moved to England. He got to know this billionaire who was at a church, and the billionaire was looking to start a radio station in Zambia that would broadcast in shortwave throughout the entire region to about 100 million listeners. He was trying to find someone to run the radio station, and he talked to lots of radio professionals who were Christians, but he found them to be very bland because they were just so professional about what they did. And my friend in the UK said, well, I have a friend who's really creative. He might be a good person for this, but he doesn't know anything about radio. And I didn't. I mean, I loved radio. So I got the job, and my wife and I flew to England. And for 3 months, I was trained by a BBC professional technician in a special, I mean, this guy was a billionaire, the guy who was doing this, in a special studio that he built just to train me. And I learned how to do everything to create radio programs. Went to Zambia, did that for about a year before my life imploded again. But it was through that I learned all of that. And I had almost forgotten that I had that skill. You know, podcasting was a big thing, and I was doing loads of YouTube videos since 2004. But when I became convinced I needed to do something about climate change, 2012, took a year off to study climate science and climate communications. And I was like, wait, I know how to do radio production. I should maybe do a podcast, which is called Climate Stew. And in Climate Stew, it was really the place for me to work out creative ideas and feelings about climate change. And it was really quirky and off the wall. And I had segments from the future, and I had all kinds of crazy characters. I had the fun things that I do on my show, but I did a radio version, and it was around climate change. And I began looking, asking, like, what are queer responses to climate change? And asking these strange questions. Nobody listened to the show. I mean, every episode maybe had 20 downloads. Half of them were me listening to it over and over again. But it gave me a chance to work out some feelings and ideas. Somebody from Citizens Climate Lobby heard this show, and they asked me if I would do a show for them, for the organization, because I was a volunteer for the organization. And that's when I started doing Citizens Climate Radio. And that just cracked open this whole other world of podcast and radio production, which is now what I do exclusively. I don't perform live anymore, except for two or three shows a year I just kind of do for charity or a special event. But it's all about helping get other voices out through radio and through podcasts.
Wow, that's an amazing little transition. So as you've gone from one area of concern to another, I'm pretty clear that when you left the born-again Christian universe, when you left that, there were probably people who did a lot of praying for your soul, right? They were concerned about where you went. And by the way, one of the things that I think I realized that a good many liberals or Quakers even don't realize, that Christian community that you were in was intensive and nurturing and wonderful.
Very much so.
And the considerably less tight-bound community of Quakers can actually leave you missing something that was back then, when you had people, admittedly, in your case, destroying part of you, but at the same time, they were trying to love you as best as they could. I'd be interested in hearing your perspective on that, because I really think that the way I think of it is, when you're just loving a small group of people, people who look like you, act like you, whatever, you can reach your arms around it. But as your arms get bigger and bigger to try and embrace the entire world, arms wide open can also be not connected at all. It can feel empty and missing in that hug that we need. So I think that that happens amongst liberals a lot, whereas conservatives can be really concentrated in their love. Anyway, I'm wondering about your perspective, having lived in those two universes.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. For one, I've worked really hard not to be angry and judgmental in a negative way towards the people of my past. For one, because I was part of that world, and I did things that now I look back and I shudder. Like, I remember I went to Times Square Church in New York City. Pastor David Wilkerson, a very famous Pentecostal minister, he put a call out. He said, there are abortion clinics in this city, and here are two addresses. I call on the soldiers of God in this congregation to stand and witness and to plead with the women going into those places to not go, because they're going to have the blood on their lives for the rest of their life. Like, this very powerful and very horrible message of shame. I was 22, and the next morning I was out there, 6:30 in the morning, because they would open up really early so that people can get in early, with signs, with other people, and sometimes just by myself. I thought at the time I was doing something not only holy and righteous, but compassionate, that I was trying to help someone from making a horrible mistake that they would regret, that would have potentially eternal consequences. It was such a violent, cruel act. But when I look back at my heart, my motivation was so much about love and caring. And that's how these things could get really mixed up. If people were genuinely angry and hateful, that burns out fast. But it's really hard when someone really believes they're in the right and they're doing it for the right reason. They love the country. They love the truth. They love the Bible. They love the people. And they're trying to turn them away from something evil. That's hard to convince them that what they're doing is harming other people. And I will never forget that I was that person, and that I did not feel hate in my heart. What I was doing was violent and cruel and mean, but it didn't feel that way. So I remember that whenever I encounter conservatives who are anti-gay or promoting nationalism or all that, often these are people who believe they're doing the right thing. Now, leaders can be very cynical and just kind of use ideas for their own purposes, but the people, the followers, often are sincere. I definitely have felt like an alien and a stranger in a strange world among Quakers, because it's not as warm and fuzzy always. You know, we're very careful about people's boundaries, and there's a coolness to Quakers that I didn't find with evangelicals that have like had a much more bigger hospitality. If you were within the group, obviously there are insiders and outsiders. But in those conservative worlds, I also was never encouraged in any way to do any serious critical thinking or to raise any objections to anything that was being said. And that is one of the powerful things about Quakers, is we are very much encouraged to think deeply about things. And if we see something wrong, to, without fear, stand up and say, I don't think this is correct, even if it's different from what everyone in the room has to say. And that has been liberating for me.
Actually, I do see that substantially the way that you see it, but I've also seen Quakers be knee-jerk. There's a Quaker I know, I've interviewed her, about consistent life. Her concern is that yeah, we as Quakers are, of course, anti-war, death penalty. We don't support death penalty. So many of us are vegetarian or vegan because we're concerned about life. How can we not be concerned about abortion? And so she presents that. And this is not in terms of this is a shame, you've done a horrible thing like abortion. But I was at an FGC gathering where she had a display she'd paid for to raise this up. And it's consistent life. It's holding all these tenets that Quakers are concerned for. And people got together a demonstration against her because she shouldn't be able to raise that up. And so I'm just saying sometimes we fail on Quaker front to do the deep listening. We do a bit knee-jerk. And it is when we see people getting hurt, it's hard not to have that rough reaction.
Right. I'm glad you brought up that story, though, because it reminds me of a new project that I've been working on. I've met three young conservatives, Republicans, who are really concerned about climate change. Through my work with Citizens Climate Lobby, it's a bipartisan organization. So there are progressives and there are conservatives. And I went to the conservative conference just to cover it for Citizens Climate Radio. And there I met these very passionate conservatives, young conservatives, who were very concerned about climate change and looking for practical solutions. I learned very quickly there's a lot of topics we cannot talk about. In fact, somehow Malcolm X got mentioned at the conversation, don't even know how. And this one young conservative from Utah, she says, oh my gosh, I love Malcolm X. I was like, really? I'm a little surprised. I said, what exactly is it about Malcolm X? She says, well, you know, Malcolm X, he was very pro-gun, and I'm pro-gun too. I'm like, okay, it's not the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of Malcolm X, but okay. But so I got to know these young people, and they wanted to do a podcast about climate change, speaking to other young conservatives, but they didn't know anything about podcasting. They'd never done any of it. And so they asked for some help, just technical advice and training. So I mentored them on how to do this. Their solutions to climate change are totally different from mine, and their motivations are completely different. But we care about the same thing, and it's okay to care about the same thing for different reasons. One of them is a very, very devout Catholic who's very pro-life. She's, you know, anti-death penalty. Like, it's very consistent in her life. And for her, addressing climate change is, for her, a matter of life. It's a pro-life stance because people are being harmed and killed because of climate change. And we can protect lives. And I was like, if that is your motivation and you got a clear message, you're going to reach people who also feel that way. So I feel no trouble helping them and assisting them. Even though many of our political beliefs are very different, we're working together for the same thing, recognizing there's different ways of getting there. And we need everyone engaged, particularly conservatives.
That eloquent voice you're listening to there is Peterson Toscano. His website, petersontoscano.com. If you got any question about spelling, just come by on northernspiritradio.org. You can spell Northern Spirit Radio correctly. That's one thing you will not get wrong with so many other names. Peterson Toscano is here for Spirit in Action because, and we've had this collaboration of energy, particularly about climate change, over the last 6-7 years at the very minimum, and probably before that as well. This is Spirit in Action, Northern Spirit Radio production. We've been doing this for 19 years now, and it's work that comes straight from my heart. It fulfills my life, and I hope you can help support me in raising up voices of people doing world-healing work, as Peterson Toscano is. And on my website, you'll find my interview with him back from 2007 and other times when I've recorded his voice and shared his messages, and so many other wonderful people, both for Spirit in Action and for Song of the Soul. So come to the site. Please post a comment when you visit. Please share with your friends and neighbors and people you don't even know yet. Just share and get the word out, because we want to raise up as many good voices of world healing as we can possibly do. On my site, you can also donate. You can donate by sending us a check. You can there by PayPal on our site. Do whichever way you can. But mainly what I'd like to see you do is in some way make our work sustainable. And you can make that work sustainable also by supporting the local community radio stations. Right now, there's some 35 stations across the U.S. that carry our programs. Please reach out and support them from your hands, from your wallet. Together, we've got to do this work. Many voices together make for strong work. So please do join us in that work. And we're getting back to talking to Peterson, who is sitting with us here today at the Friends General Conference gathering being held at Haverford College. This is the first day of this gathering here, and things are just being ironed out as which room we're in, getting people out there. But we do these interviews at the Friends General Conference gathering yearly, six of them this year. So,
and I have a word to say about Northern Spirit Radio, because that was a very good plug. I was reaching for my wallet, actually, as you were speaking. You were speaking so movingly about it. But what I have personally love about Northern Spirit Radio and Spirit in Action is that you provide a platform for people to get their messages out to people who may not be looking for that message. Like, I do podcasts. And when you do a podcast, your audience is looking for you, and they're specifically typing in, I want to listen to this podcast. They subscribe to a certain one. But there's a lot of people who may want to hear one of my shows, but they don't even know it exists. So by being on those 35 radio stations, when you let me rebroadcast an episode of Citizens Climate Radio or Climate Changed Podcast or Quakers Today, it gives me a reach that I could not possibly have. And there's no way to calculate how many people have found my work and my podcast through that, but there's got to be, because people turn it on anywhere in their car, at home, and those are people I could never reach. So your ministry, your work is so important and has been so valuable to me in getting my work out. And the people I create podcasts for, they're so grateful, because it's something I could say, well, we can maybe even reach some more people. It is a labor of love you're doing, and I'm going to take up your offer and double my efforts of letting people know what you're doing and how they can support you.
Thank you so much, Peterson. There's something that came to my mind. You went as a missionary. Again, this is still in your born-again Christian phase. You're having problems thinking about yourself as gay and trying to extirpate that from your system. And you go as a missionary to Africa. Now, my experience of having traveled to Rwanda and to the Congo and Kenya and so on is that these are not places where gays are accepted well. I have a feeling that you're going there might have even upped the pressure on you even more. I think there was more tolerance, acceptance in the United States than in some of those societies, at least at that point. Am I wrong?
Well, definitely living in New York City, I felt I needed to be in a different location because it was not working, me trying not to be gay and living in New York City. And of course, I was married to a woman and felt terrible about infidelity and in times that I was unfaithful to her. And that's never good for any marriage. But it wasn't just infidelity. It was the more I suppressed these desires, the more unmanageable they became. And I would say the more they became just out of control. You know, that's the thing. There may be things we don't like about ourselves and maybe things that we have to change about ourselves, but things that are good about us or just natural, if we deny them, not only will they potentially become silenced, they may morph into like a monster. And, you know, so that you start feeling out of control. And I remember in the book of Ephesians, or the Galatians, where it talks about the fruit of the Holy Spirit. And one of them is self-control. And I just felt like the more I pressed down on those things, the less control I had. And I don't think it's about like if you're gay or straight or whatever, you have to have sex all the time. It's not about that. It's about integrating who you are with all the different parts. And that was psychologically destructive when I refused to do that. And I was aided and abetted in that. So I believe when I went to Zambia, I thought, okay, great. This is a place where it's totally illegal to be gay. I have all these constrictions that will keep me on the straight and narrow path. But it doesn't work that way. As one of my pastors would always say, wherever you go, there you are. And you can't run away from your problems or your questions. You've got to face those, or else they get bigger and they get misshapen.
That makes sense to me. Peterson, let's get back to Citizens Climate Radio. Again, 2012, you start making this transition in this direction. You're invited by someone from Citizens Climate Lobby, and so you start doing this show. And again, you've passed me contacts and guests of people who've been doing various aspects of this work. And it's been so beautiful to see all the fruitful places where you find this growing, where you're nurturing it, of course, with your work. You eventually got connected with some people, the BTS Center. And this was just last few years. This has come onto the scene. They're from up in Maine. You're not from Maine. How, why, what, where, how did that connection happen? Because you're putting no small amount of labor into that work.
Yeah, well, the pandemic had lots of negative aspects to it, but some real positive ones. It got us to be creative and inventive on how we communicate. The BTS Center used to be the Bangor Theological Seminary, and after 100 years of struggling to stay open, they finally shut down. They sold up everything and ended up with a ton of money, which they then put into an endowment and created the BTS Center. And shortly after that, they discerned that their primary objective was to help promote spiritual leadership for a climate-changed world. When the pandemic hit, they had to cancel all of their programming that they had in person and begin to do online things. And there's an amazing book called Rooted and Rising, which is about religious, spiritual approaches to climate change. And I have an essay in that anthology. And because of that, they did a book study of the book, and they had me come on and speak about my little essay that I did, which I compared the struggle to address the HIV/AIDS crisis to the struggle we have today to address climate change. And some of the same sort of issues at play, a government that refuses to act, some people suffering, people are afraid, a need for real creativity. And they really liked that essay, and they liked my presentation. And then from there, I just started doing more things for them. I do a presentation called A Queer Response to Climate Change, What Would Walt Whitman Do? And these, of course, I had to adapt for the internet because I only ever did these in person. I did a workshop for them about pursuing our passions in a time of climate change, where my message is, don't drop everything and take on climate change. Embrace everything you've been already concerned about and see how those are potentially tools to help us address climate change or passions that need to be pursued even more because in a climate change world, those things are affected more. So I use the example of LGBTQ youth homelessness. And on the streets in America, 40% of homeless youth are queer kids. So they're already vulnerable on nice days. They won't go to shelters because they're discriminated against. What happens with the extreme heat events that we're getting, the extreme weather events? What happens to these kids? Suddenly, my concern for them is even more important in a climate change world. So I do those things, and then they decided they wanted to do a podcast. And I said, I don't want to be a host on a podcast. I'm on enough. People have heard my voice enough, but I'll definitely help you produce it. And boy, they're really committed to excellence. Incredible guests. They had Margaret Wheatley, who's a really powerful voice of, you know, helping people just see the world in fresh new ways. And this upcoming season, they're going to have very alternative voices that they've not had before. You know, people from Catholic traditions, from even evangelical traditions, all people who are concerned about climate change and trying to promote spiritual leadership. And they're just really great. And I'm just grateful again that you will air these episodes as well on Spirit in Action.
Well, I'm grateful for them. And as I've said so many times on this program, people tell me I have a radio voice. I also say I have a radio face, which makes it good to be doing radio programs. But the fact that I have a voice that works okay for radio is a positive thing, but it's really not about me. And that's, I'm very clear. And so many evangelical person, the people that we know who are big religious people, so much it looks like it's about them. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to be about me. I'd be very happy to pass this on to other people, except I still want to do this work. This is work I love. I'm 70, so I can be retired theoretically, right? But who wants to be retired? I'm excited. There's one complaint I have to hand to the BTS Center of People in the program Climate Changed, and that is that D at the end of changed is so hard to get in there, and it would be very easy for people to miss it. So I think it has to be renamed Climate Changed.
We just pronounce it that way. Climate Changed podcast. Yeah. Also, with Citizens Climate Lobby, they love an apostrophe. It's Citizens apostrophe S. And I was like, oh, please don't give me an apostrophe in a name of a title that people are going to search. It's just not going to happen.
An apostrophe would be a catastrophe.
It would be. Yeah. That's why with Quakers Today podcast. I was like, I want a very simple, straightforward title, Quakers Today.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Quakers Today. This is, again, I said climate changed podcast, Citizens Climate Radio. You're a busy person, and Bubble and Squeak and all of the rest, you add in more stuff. So how can you do that? And I mean, I know part of it was that back during COVID, you and Glenn, you went to South Africa, where he's from originally.
My husband is from there. Yeah, yes. We lived there for 18 months.
So you transitioned there. I guess you can work from whichever computer's in front of you. But it still seems to me like this is an incredible amount of work because you do it to a level of technical competency that makes me feel very inferior. And so I'm hoping you're going to apologize to me for that damage you're doing to my feelings. Not at all. I appreciate your work so much. But I really think that you put so much time, energy, and creativity in the work you do. I'm amazed at the amount you do.
One thing that's changed in the past 2 years is I now insist for all my clients to hire, pay for interns to work with me. Not so much to help me, I mean, it definitely does help me, but also to mentor them in how to do this kind of work. It started with Citizens Climate Lobby, which still is unable to pay their interns, and I'm hoping they'll get a grant or something for that. But they have lots of people who want to intern for them in the various things they do. They do amazing legislative stuff to put a price on carbon. And they asked one time, would you want an intern? I said, I'll consider it. I looked at the applications and I chose three. I said, can I have three? Because they were just so interesting. One was a conservative and I wanted to get that voice onto the show. And it's been such a lovely thing because this kind of work is very lonely often. You know, I get to speak to a guest, but that's just 30 minutes. Sometimes I will spend 7 hours just listening to their voice and editing it. It gets lonely. So I've benefited by having some peers who can also then give me some fresh ideas. I get to mentor people and they get to assist me with things so that I can actually do more. What I really try to do, and I have interns now for Quakers Today, Climate Change. I also work with Pendle Hill with their podcast, The Seed. I help them with production for that. All of them have these interns that now are learning these skills. And in some cases, after 6 months, they could research, record, produce an entire episode on their own. So they're learning really good skills. And many of them are actually not interested in going into podcasting, but they say it's helped them so much to improve their communication skills and their writing, particularly around climate change, which is not an easy thing to talk about. And so I feel like in this part of my life, it is very much about teamwork and collaboration and mentoring so that this work can carry on when I'm no longer around, but also that the work gets multiplied and other people can start using these skills in lots of ways, making short videos, audio clips, because we do live in a world where people consume a lot of content and a lot of it's junk. So why not get more people making good stuff?
Would you be willing, if all things considered, wanted to take a 10-minute bit from your podcast, would you be willing to let them broadcast 10 minutes of you? Because, you know, they've got all kinds of people jumping in with this and that. Why not yours? I mean, 10 minutes of Citizens Climate Radio, if they just put it on there, I think would be perfect. And there's so many ears out there that need to hear that.
People need to hear really helpful messages about climate change because it is a very difficult issue to wrap our heads around. Not the science of it, not accepting the reality of it, but figuring out what the heck do I do with it? So yeah, I'm scared and I'm overwhelmed and this is real, but now what? That's what people are looking for because I genuinely believe that we're in a time of great crisis and catastrophe, and we're in a time of great purpose where people, young and old, can really embrace their purpose in the world. And many people have already. And they can then do it in a bigger way because climate change is a multiplier. It's a threat multiplier. I hope it's an empathy multiplier as well. And so I'm hoping that for people listening, that they're not thinking, oh, climate change. Oh, so solar panels, you know, oh, well, get a Prius. I'm like, I don't care about those things. I care that your heart is connected with your community and we recognize we are in hard times and hard times are coming. People are being displaced from their homes. They need someone to be able to take them in. I became a volunteer with the Red Cross because I wanted something practical to do because these things are just going to happen more and more. And you listening, you have some skills. It might be camping or canning or growing or caring for people or just being a great host. Those are all unbelievably valuable skills in a climate-changed world. So you've got a part to play in this, and you don't have to learn a whole new set of tricks. You don't have to drop what you're doing. What you're doing is probably very, very much needed in our world today.
I want to step back before we finish this hour together, Peterson. I want to grab and tie off a couple threads from what you talked about before. One was, I assume you've been exposed to the idea, John Shelby Spong is the one who opened my mind to this, the possibility that Paul, the apostle, that he was a self-hating gay. You were immersed in the Bible. You've studied it in depth. But one of the things that has been proposed, I guess back in the 1930s first time, was that he was a self-hating gay, and so that was the thorn in his side, and that his imprecations that the best way for men to be was to be celibate, but if not, then marry a woman. That sounds exactly like it could come from a gay man who is trying not to be gay. Mm-hmm. Have you been exposed to that idea before?
Absolutely.
Does it fit with you? I mean, you actually lived part of that message.
Yeah. It's so hard to know. What I love about that Romans passage where he talks about the thorn in the flesh is that everyone can relate to it. I mean, everyone has some thorn in their flesh, this thing that you're not happy with, that you wish it wasn't there, that it's, you know, they call it the shadow side. There's lots of ways of saying this. So in a way, it's a very powerful passage because it can relate to everybody. And definitely, as a person struggling, trying not to be gay, I was like, oh my gosh, it has to be. You know, it's so obvious. I have this thorn in my flesh. What I want to do, I don't do. The thing that I don't want to do, that's what I do. It's classic, but it also works with addiction. It works with lots of things. One thing I think is really interesting, Romans 1 is often used to condemn gay people because it has this litany of things that Paul is railing against. And my husband, who teaches creative writing, who's a really good writer, he doesn't know the Bible very well, but he heard some of us talking about this Romans 1 passage that's often used as a clobber passage against gays. And he said, let me have a look at it. I was like, okay, big shot. He looks at Romans 1 and he immediately, about 10 minutes later, says, oh, I figured out the problem. I was like, oh, dude, did you? You just figured out the problem.
Well, it can't help but Glenn's brilliance.
Yeah. He says, yeah, it's just that he doesn't have control over his language. It just needs some editing. It's really unclear what he's saying. And so as a result, it's ambiguous. And so it's being misinterpreted. And when you look at the text that way, you realize, oh, yeah, this is a very poorly written first draft. And that it is bad. It's just the language is just bad. And it's not coherent. And as a result, it can be interpreted lots of different ways. Who knows what he was trying to say, but he had no control over his language. If he was gay, if he was attracted to men, he lived in a strange time because it was Rome, but it was a Grecian culture with a lot of the things with the naked running in the gymnasium, and there was the baths, and there would be lots of temptations for men who were attracted to men or who were, for whatever reason, had some hatred of their body or their sexuality. He could have very well been someone who was sexually abused as well. And some of those same things, you know, I often hear people accusing homophobes of being secretly homophobic themselves, but there are a lot of men who have been sexually abused and don't know what to do with it. And they displace that on gay people because it's the closest thing in their mind to what they experience if they were abused by a man. Again, I think Quakers bring this to the table often, love and compassion and seeing that of God in everyone and recognizing there's so much more to this story than that. And that's what makes the Bible so great, too. These stories are very small. There's lots left out, so it gives room for a lot of imagination and reflection. Ultimately, we're not reading the Bible. The Bible is reading us.
It's so beautiful the way that you deal that. Obviously, and this was the last thing I wanted to tie off, the thread I wanted to tie off is there was the period where you were immersed in the Bible and so animated with the love around you and wanting to be that thing for the world. Then the period where you couldn't even look at the Bible because it reminded you of the hurt, the part of you that felt you were unworthy and needed to be killed, that didn't know that God loved you as you were right at that moment. And you set about with your programs to provide a road to healing for people, for gays particularly, who had been struggling with this. you were helping them heal. You said after 5 years, you stopped. Was that because finally you had been healing enough other people and you had been healed enough? Because then you went to the Bible again.
It's an interesting thing because actually as I was performing the Homo Nomo Halfway House and talking about the experience, it actually became harder and harder to do. In part because I believe I was, I don't know if it was so much healed, but so much more aware of the trauma, the harm. And I found myself being re-traumatized. So I actually was on Morning Edition once. Lise Spiegel interviewed me about conversion therapy. And she, you know, was, I think that's her name. She did a lot of psychological kind of pieces. She sat me down and she wanted me to like reimagine certain situations in my life. And it was utterly traumatizing. In a way, I don't think it would have been 5 years before because I was so bound up and so unaware. But I had grown so, like, I guess I had become so much closer to it and understood it that it made it harder to relive it every night on stage or in an interview. So these days, I don't talk about it much because I'm much more sensitive than I had been. Is that healing? I guess it is, but it wasn't the art that did it. It was actually therapy. I know that art is therapeutic, but for me, it didn't replace therapy. And it was really important to see trained therapists who really helped me to understand these situations, who, you know, are experts in helping people. Art definitely helped me to make sense of some of it, but it was the therapy that really brought the healing and the clarity.
Last thing I wanted to ask you about, Peterson, was 5 years dealing with this first issue, the healing related to accepting ourselves for the sexual people we are. 5 years working on the Bible and finding the alternate voices in the Bible. But now it's been 12 years for Climate Radio, and I thought everything was supposed to be in 5 years.
I thought things were 5 years, too. No, you know, some issues, they just, it's so important for people who are involved in any kind of passion to know when to stop, right? Because it makes room for other people, even if you're the best one. Well, how is anyone going to get better if you don't step aside? And it's not that you are giving up on that thing. I still care very much about trans issues. That's what really motivated me to do the Bible stuff. And I do a lot of work around trans issues. The Trans Justice Funding Project is one of my favorites, and I always give money to it, raise money for it, because they provide money for trans organizations, the Trans Justice Funding Project. And similarly, the Bible, it comes with me. All of that comes with me to the climate work. So when I'm doing climate work, I'm also talking about the lives of LGBTQ people, the contributions we can make, and the vulnerabilities that we have. I use the Bible to tell stories that can connect to climate change. So I don't leave those things. With climate change, though, I have a feeling this is an issue. There's no doubt. One way or another, I'm going to be engaged with this work for the rest of my life because this one's not going away anytime soon. And even if public perception changes and we immediately go green, which will be, it is happening and it's a huge task, the effects of climate change are baked in. And so we're looking at a generation or two of experiencing freakier, wilder, more dangerous extreme weather events. And with that needs to come much more community cohesion and love, compassion, preparation. So on a small scale in my community, on a larger scale, speaking to a larger audience, one way or another, I can't imagine living on the planet and not being engaged somehow. Likely in South Africa, where we're considering moving permanently.
Oh, you're going to move. Now we're going to have to talk across 6 time zones. And again, I'm going to be talking to Glenn later this week. Yes. About some of his writing, some of this. I'm so grateful to hear of more of the depth of your story. Of course, I knew major pieces of it. It was so wonderful sitting here with you today, feeling the size of your love for those close to you and ever bigger circles around the world, and including the whole globe. So thank you so much for doing that and joining me here today for Spirit in Action.
It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Mark.
Again, links for Peterson Toscano are on my site. PetersonToscano.com has links to everything, including to QuakersToday.org, CCLUSA.org/radio. That's for the Citizens Climate Radio podcast and ClimateChangePodcast.org. We'll see you all next week for Spirit in Action.
The theme music for this program is Turning of the World, performed by Sarah Thompson. Check out all things Spirit in Action on northernspiritradio.org. Guests, links, stations, and a place for your feedback, suggestions, and support. Thanks for listening. I'm Mark Helpsmeet, and I hope you find deep roots to support you to grow steadily toward the light. This is Spirit in Action.
With every voice, with every song.